in general, what we're doing with acidification is we're trying to lower the pH in the gut of the animal. And why do we care about that? Well, if we can help lower that pH, that tends to provide a healthier gut from a standpoint of a microbial community in the gut. Additionally, you know, we can have some impacts on some specific pathogens, particularly bacterial pathogens in nature. We can have some direct as well as indirect impacts. So that's important. And then also when we acidify the gut, the gut tends to work more efficiently.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Keep your feed safe from pathogens with VVC Premix. VVC Premix from DSM Firmenich is made up of ultra-pure benzoic acid and nature-identical flavorings to guard your feed and improve performance.
Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Start your journey with us at eastman.com. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet.
Sid Lines, an Ecolab company, offers a broad range of cleaning and disinfection solutions combined with tailored advice to improve hygiene in the swine industry. Your response is critical. Take the National Swine Health Strategy Survey at porkcheckoff.org/swinehealth.
Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Swine It Podcast. I'm your host, Trey Kellner, and I'm excited because today I'm joined by Dr. Mark Whitney, a technical service manager from Eastman Chemical Company. And today we are talking about acidification. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Great, Trey. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. It's a Friday. And we, you know, have some sunshine and spring and summers here. So what a great time to talk about acidification. But before we do, Mark, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, sure. So, Dr. Mark Whitney, as you mentioned, I'm tech service manager with Eastman Animal Nutrition, and I've been in this position for just about 2 years. I've been working in the commercial livestock industry here on the swine side for the past dozen years. And prior to that, I was working on the university side of things, doing some research, heading up extension at the University of Minnesota. I reside here in Minnesota. I live in southern Minnesota, grew up in southern Minnesota, so haven't strayed too far from my home roots. I'm married. I've got three kids. But to give away my age, they're adult children now, so I'm in that stage of life now. So, but very happy to be able to join you for this episode.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining us, Mark, and I'm sure we'll learn something together, and then hopefully our listeners will get to learn along with us as well. So let's just start really big picture, right? Acidification is a word we hear all the time as nutritionists, and sometimes whether it's, you know, veterinarians or, you know, at the slat level, they hear it but might not fully understand what it means. So what's kind of your definition of acidification? And then how and why does acidification work within pig production?
Sure. So just in general, what we're doing with acidification is we're trying to lower the pH in the gut of the animal. And why do we care about that? Well, if we can help lower that pH, that tends to provide a healthier gut from a standpoint of a microbial community in the gut. Additionally, you know, we can have some impacts on some specific pathogens, particularly bacterial pathogens in nature. We can have some direct as well as indirect impacts. So that's important. And then also when we acidify the gut, the gut tends to work more efficiently. In particular, you know, we look at enzyme activity in the gut, and when we have a lower pH, those enzymes are working more efficiently. That means we've got a better capability of breaking down and absorbing those nutrients in the diet and utilizing them. And on a side note from that, then, if we are able to absorb more of those nutrients, then less of those nutrients are available for some of your pathogenic organisms further down the GI tract.
Eastman serves veterinarians and nutritionists in agrochemical and animal health industries by helping them select, evaluate, and implement innovative nutritional programs. Eastman works with your team to customize your gut health approach in feed and water. Eastman's approach addresses nutritional and bacterial challenges and finds new ingredient preservation and hygiene solutions. Explore ways to accelerate and innovate your programs. Contact the Animal Nutrition Team at eastman.com.
Awesome, Mark. So let's talk about how we can acidify, right? So there's water options, there's feed options. So let's just start there. What are the options to acidify? And then from there, I'll ask you, hey, are there advantages or disadvantages to these different methods, right?
Sure, sure. And I'll even back up one step further. Acidifying, we can do that with organic acids, or we can do that with inorganic acids. Mm-hmm. We found, if you look in the literature and in past research studies, you tend to see a more consistent response from organic acids as far as improving performance in pigs and or some of those health parameters. So that's what we tend to concentrate on, or we use a combination of the two. Inorganic acids are in general, a much stronger acids, so you can certainly lower the pH much faster or with less amounts. But as I mentioned, we have some other advantages with organic acids from a standpoint of animal health and performance. That being said, and I just had this question actually from somebody else this morning. Do I acidify through the feed? Do I acidify through the water? The answer is yes. It really is. Ultimately, we're trying to accomplish the same goal, right? We're decreasing that pH. We're having those impacts in the gut. It's really kind of a matter of logistics and the situation and how it's dependent and what is probably most importantly, what's the easiest or the best way to execute the acidification. So, if we've got a long-term plan, for instance, most folks or a lot of folks acidify nursery diets, particularly early nursery diets. Why do we do that? It's a stage in production for that animal where that pig doesn't necessarily have enough hydrochloric acid production on its own to decrease that pH as low as what would be ideal. And on top of that, that young piglet, because we are essentially weaning that piglet at an immature stage, at least from a GI tract maturation standpoint, some of the enzymes and the enzyme function is somewhat limited also. So we need to try to do what we can to improve that as best possible. So acidification makes a lot of sense in that case. If we're doing it in the nursery and we're doing it consistently, well, then it's very easy to have that as part of our feeding program and part of the diet. And on the same standpoint, if and when we have challenges that arise, from time to time, whether it be E. coli or other pathogens that come through, if we've got some acidification, great, and that helps. There is no silver bullet, but if we need some additional assistance there, we can also acidify in the water. And in fact, I actually encourage folks right away at weaning. It's not a bad thing to be acidifying in both, just because, like I say, that early wean pig is really challenged to produce enough acid. Plus, you've got all the other stresses at weaning, and so anything we can do to help assist that pig to do what it's supposed to do, particularly on the digestive end, and to help, against some of those enteric pathogens, can be very helpful. So we're getting to the same endpoint, whether we do it through the diet or through the water. We're better able to react if we have specific situations if we do it in the water. But from a long-term planning standpoint and long-term execution standpoint, it makes a lot of sense oftentimes to have it, at least in some of our diets, when we know we can use the assistance.
Yeah, for sure. Mark, just kind of a follow-up, right? Some of our listeners may be like, hey, I remember organic chemistry in college, or hey, I remember seeing that. Like, hey, there's a lot of different acids, right? So you talked about the difference between inorganic and organic. You want to help break that down a little bit for our listeners? And then, hey, like differences between formic acid and benzoic acid, right? Like these, you want to kind of help our listeners kind of walk through those differences for us, Mark?
You bet. So when we talk about organic We're not talking about some sort of an audited program and it's being raised in some way or direction. From a chemistry and from a basic standpoint, when we say organic, it simply means that it contains carbon. And so when you look at the organic acids, if they are the short chain acids, organic acids or fatty acids, we're talking about butyric acid, we're talking about formic acid, acetic, propionic. Those would be the very short chain organic acids. And then certainly you get into longer length acids as well. And then you have some, and those would be the simple fatty acids, but then we also have some organic acids that have a little different characteristics. So benzoic, for instance, why is that a little bit different? Well, it's got a benzene ring attached to it. And so then it can act a little bit different in some situations. Citric acid, lactic acid, those would also be kind of one-off, but organic acids that oftentimes we use in systems. From an inorganic acid standpoint, you know, probably the one that's used to at least some level would be phosphoric acid. And that's been shown to have some enhancement in performance in certain situations. But like I say, the majority of the time when we're talking about supplementing these diets or in the water, we're oftentimes trying to do it from a organic acid standpoint. And so, yeah, there's some other chemistry differences, but essentially it's just a matter of if it contains carbon or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, thanks, Mark. Appreciate that. So you talked a little bit about digestive help, right? So acid is not only, you know, helping break down our feedstuff materials throughout the GI tract, but also talk about how, hey, the innate enzymes that the pig has are more functional at a different pH level. So kind of talk about some synergisms within the GI tract of, hey, not only are we reducing pH and this might have a direct impact on those feedstuffs, but kind of talk about the synergistic effects as well.
Yeah. So as with most things that we find out once you get very much involved in animal nutrition, nothing is very simple, right? And, mm-hmm. and multiple things oftentimes act together. And certainly when you look at enzyme activity that occurs in the animal, in the pig, organic acids would be one of those factors that can certainly interact quite a bit. Just from the way that these enzymes work, they are able to increase the speed of their activity. And enzymes, in essence, what they're doing is helping to initiate that process of breaking down nutrients, right? And so if we're able to speed up the activity of those enzymes, we're able to increase the potential amount of nutrients that are released and then available to be absorbed by the pig. And, you know, we don't have a finite amount of time because the digest is moving through the gut of the pig. So it becomes even more important, right, that we can do what we can to further process that feed, if you want to call it that way. So that is certainly one way that it works synergistically with the enzymes. As I mentioned before, you know, we can also relate that to the microbial community in the gut. And we continue to learn more and more on some of the interactions between the microbial community in the gut and how it impacts the host back and forth, right? And so some of the impacts that we can have, for instance, with organic acids on these microbes also indirectly have an impact on some of the metabolism that occurs and some of these other processes, whether it be the speed of digestive movement through the gut or sometimes, you know, if you've got pathogens involved, the involvement of the immune system, for instance. There's so many systems and there's interactions taking place, and it's an exciting field. I mean, it's something I've really enjoyed at this stage in my career to be able to concentrate more on, and we continue to learn more and more every day on it. But so I don't know if that answered your question on that side of things, but there's a lot of interactions. The organic acids are involved there, not only directly with the enzymes because of the lowering of pH, but then also from the microbial community, because in general, the pathogenic organisms don't thrive as well in the gut at a lower pH. Whereas we have a number of beneficial bacteria, such as some of our lactobacilli, some of our bifidobacteria, that do thrive and do well. And what we want to have, you know, we're not going to have a gut that's devoid of bacteria. No, there's going to be bacteria there. So what we want it to be is a healthy community of bacteria. And so as we lower the pH, that encourages healthy and discourages more of the bad bugs, if you want to call it. And then additionally, on top of that, organic acids actually have a direct impact right at the very beginning of the digestive system, in that they can actually be antipathogenic as well. But that's really what occurs in the stomach and maybe just the very beginning of the small intestine. But all the other activities of acids, and when we're talking about lowering pH, that's really occurring primarily along the small intestine. But that's also where we end up with a lot of challenges oftentimes, and that's where most of our digestive processes are occurring as well.
For sure. So, Mark, let's kind of dive into, you know, some of your recent findings, et cetera, in terms of, hey, how can acidification help us in health insults, right? Whether that's an E. coli challenge post-weaning or things like that. Mark, things that you can share with our audience about what you found here recently.
You know, with our group, we concentrate on the non-ruminant side. I can tell you from the poultry side of things that, you know, they've found a lot of value in utilizing organic acids from a standpoint of helping to minimize or control salmonella issues and challenges, right? On the swine side, you know, we can have some challenges issues there, but I think particularly in the nursery stage, what we're most concerned with, and particularly the last several years we've had challenges with, is E. coli. And so, you know, we've done some work looking at that. We did an E. coli challenge study here not too long ago with our organic acid product, which it's a blended product, but it's formic acid happens to be one of the main components is, and found some very interesting impacts. You know, not only from a performance standpoint, but more importantly, when you look at the bacterial impact that E. coli has on that pig during a challenge study, you know, we were able to decrease bacterial load that we found in the immune system organs. So if you look at the mesenteric lymph nodes, if you look at the spleen, cutting down those bacterial loads in those organs by more than half. And then you look at the immune system, another potential image instance where organic acids or their esters, which are monoglycerides, can have an impact is on the immune system, helping to modulate the immune response. And so not stop the immune response, but to dampen the severity of the response. And so especially in a young pig with a lot of stress, trying to not have that pig be overwhelmed when they have something like an E. coli challenge. If we can spread out that immune function, the inflammation, all the other things that go on, I think it gives the pig a better chance of going through it and recovering from it. We need to have some of those immune responses occur. That's why Mother Nature has them occurring in the pig to begin with. But the challenge is, if it becomes so overwhelming that now the pig isn't eating, the pig is decreased consuming water, the pig has lost a willingness to thrive. If we can help somewhat on there, we can simply help the pig with its own system, you know, to deal with that. So that's some different ways that works, and that we found in that E. coli challenge trial as well. And certainly another area, that immune system impact that we can have, again, another interaction there and a way that we can really assist that pig in dealing with those challenges.
Yeah. So Mark, let's pivot a little bit, right? We spent the first part of this podcast talking specifically around the nursery pig. But are there other opportunities or phases of production where you think acidification might be a good play for pork producers, whether that's in a heat stress event, the stress of late finishing? What are your thoughts in where your group is heading with that research?
As we've mentioned, the nursery is the easiest spot that we've always started and worked at, because we know that pig is challenged in a number of ways with its GI tract. We're able to have an impact there. But you know what's interesting, we've looked at some other studies most recently, and we just presented these results at Midwest meetings. We did a late grow finish study, trying to see if we could help improve performance or feed conversion, you know, that last 4 to 6 weeks of the finishing period when that pig is eating a lot of feed, it was not particularly efficient. And if we can pick up a few points in feed conversion, you know, we can pick up some value there. And in that study, we found that providing an organic acidifier in that situation, we were able to pick up about 3.5% improvement in feed conversion when we started feeding this organic acid at around 205 pounds body weight up until 285 pounds for market weight, which is, you know, quite substantial. You're talking 8 or 9 points in feed conversion there. Certainly much more than enough to pay for itself in that scenario. So, and that was under some fairly thermoneutral conditions. These were pigs that were primarily in the spring and early summer coming off of test. So we're following that up with a study right now with the same partner, an integrated producer that we're working with, and looking at these pigs coming off test in the heat of summer, so in July and in August. My expectation would be we'd even pick up more feed conversion and maybe some growth performance impacts. With this initial study, we actually ended up reaching our final body weight in the same amount of time, so our growth rate wasn't impacted. It just took less feed to get to that point. I think when we look at heat stress scenarios, when we're potentially limiting intake also in that scenario, I think we'll see a combination of feed conversion as well as growth responses that'll be positive in that scenario. So that's exciting for us. Certainly, I would think for most producers, because with the amount of feed that's being consumed at that period of time, anything we can do to help feed conversion wise is really going to help on a feed cost standpoint. Another area that we've been looking at, working with a different integrated producer out there, is looking at utilization of some of these products and components in sow diets. I think we've got some potential there. We know that productivity of these sows is just amazing, but we're really putting a lot of stress on these sows, and I think we're having to continually learn more, better ways to try to help manage that, and certainly nutrition and things that we can help with gastrointestinal health can be part of that. We're very early in on that work. We've seen some promising promising initial results that could be related to either organic acids or their monoglyceride esters, and how it maybe is potentially impacting gut health in those sows or some of those immune system factors. We're doing some follow-up work there. We're planning on doing some work in conjunction with some university folks, get some reproductive physiologists involved, try to really understand and feel that out, some more and understand mode of action here. So those are areas that haven't typically gotten much attention in the past. And so we're limited in how much we do know. So everything that we're finding out is for the most part, new information and certainly pretty exciting, interesting applications to go that way. From an organic standpoint, the one organic acid that has been used quite a bit for sows, particularly in Europe, is benzoic acid from a standpoint of helping to control intrauterine infections. The way that benzoic acid is metabolized is a little different than a lot of our other organic acids, but it actually helps to acidify the urine in those sows. And so if you have that being an issue in your sow herd, providing some benzoic acid in the diets or in the water and for those animals can help along the urinary tract standpoint.
Yeah, that's awesome, Mark. Thanks for sharing.
A worldwide leader in animal nutrition, Adiseo's portfolio of products includes methionine, the full range of vitamins, enzymes, organic selenium, probiotics, mycotoxin management strategies, and palatability products. With such a diverse offering, Adiseo supports its customers with a broad range of expertise, tools, and services to help them maintain a competitive advantage. Adiseo, fueling predictable profits. To learn more, visit Adiseo at www.adiseo.com.
Any other items in terms of acidification that you'd like to highlight or go over or reemphasize before we get to our final questions?
Sure. I think organic acids, like a lot of these tools, right, they're not silver bullets, but they are something that can be very helpful. But understanding the situation and the scenario where it's most effective, or what kind of acid you should be using and what level. Those are all questions that are kind of situation dependent. And when I say organic acids, we talked a little bit that earlier, mentioned some of them, but they have differences in the type of pathogens that they're impacting, or that the way that they are maybe, you know, being dissociated and utilized in the gut. It might be in different areas of the gut. That's all acids are not created equal, I guess would be the simplest way of stating that. And actually a lot of folks, including us, would be recommending that you don't necessarily just use straight organic acids. We find that using certain blends oftentimes will give us some additional synergy. So you're getting advantages from a number of different sources. You can get more bang for your buck, so to speak, for the investment that you have in those organic acids. So, sure. And that being said, organic acids work well with a number of other feed additive type technologies out there. The mode of action is different than most of these other products. So for instance, we did a study where we looked at kind of the U.S. Production, where we've got some antibiotics and we've got some high zinc levels in our early nursery diets. But we also looked at a scenario where we have a European model, right? So no antibiotics, just maintenance levels, zinc levels. And in both of those scenarios and situations, we could see similar improvements in growth performance when we utilized our acidifying product. And I think the short story or the summary of that is that the mode of action is different than the mode of action that we're coming in with those antibiotics and or that zinc product. And that's allowing us to provide additional benefits and sometimes synergistic impacts where maybe 1 + 1 = 3, so to speak. So
it's time for our famous 3.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at FortivaImpact.com.
Vaccinova, formulate to your needs, custom-made vaccines. Visit us at vaccinova.us.com for more info. That's vaxxinova.us.com.
SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions.
Uniferon 200 from Pharmacosmos, the iron dextrin for baby pigs, which promotes faster growth. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost pig health and performance. Optimize growth in baby pigs with Uniferon 200 iron dextrin from Pharmacosmos. Field studies have demonstrated 2 1-milliliter doses of Uniferon 200 can lead to a 7-pound increase at market weight, along with a 5% increase in average daily gain. 2 1-milliliter doses of Uniferon 200 are recommended to ensure enhanced growth and performance from weaning to market. To learn more, visit us.uniferon.com/research.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks, Mark. Well, hey, we'll kind of start off here first. Mark, do you have a favorite pork dish that you like to grill or make in the summertime?
I have a number of favorite pork dishes. I would say the one that I've been making more lately would be I've been making carnitas.
Ooh.
And I got for a gift here a year or so ago one of those flat top grills. And carnitas are kind of fun to make on that, and we've been enjoying that a lot. So yeah, it kind of depends. I think I just made sweet and sour pork last night. We eat a lot of pork around our house, but that's one of the things I love about pork. It's so, you can do so many things with it. So
yes.
Of course, a nice thick pork chop is always good, but also like getting a little bit of creative sometimes.
Yeah, it's a great ingredient and has more flexibility than we give it granted for it. So yeah, really appreciate you pointing that out. Mark, if you could share with us, what's the biggest hurdle that you've overcome in your career that you're the most proud of?
That's a good one. I think maybe what I'm most proud of is I think I've been able to be fairly open and flexible to different scenarios and situations. Not that it's been easy, but and that's something I've tried to portray to my children as well, is you know, you got to keep an open mind. If you think everything's going to go one way, it almost guaranteed it's not going to. And maybe early on in my career, I kind of had more of that mindset. But I've learned over the years that you got to keep an open mind and be open to being flexible in what you're doing and how you're doing things. It really opens up your experiences. It opens up your experiences, but your background, your understanding just makes you more complete, whether it be as an individual or on your professional side of your career, what have you. And just a quick example of that would be, in my previous careers, I had a short stint where I was a tech service manager over in China and in Japan. Well, the timing wasn't very good. It was right when ASF was coming out. And so it ended up being only about a 1-year stint. But I am so glad that I did it. I got a number of different experiences and learned so much even in that short period of time. So that's one thing I would encourage people to do is not be afraid to go out and try different things and just be open for them.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing. Well, Mark, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. And a great conversation on certification. So with that concludes this episode of the Swinet Podcast. We're everywhere where you can listen to your podcasts, and we come out with new episodes every week. Thanks for joining us, and thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Trey. Take care.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.